Wow, if you are looking for a fun topic, today's your day. Just kidding.
You say that like we haven't already had some.
We keep running through these fun like, topics. What,
three in a row?
Yeah.
Today we're talking about divorce. Week 9 or Never Read a Bible Verse, part 2. Matthew 19, 3 through 9.
The last 3 weeks, each of the arguments, you're going from homosexuality to gender to this, we keep referring to Matthew 19, right? Because this is where Jesus, you know, goes back to the beginning and what it looks like. So now we're actually going to kind of cover this. And I think when people get married, that they typically have this pie in the sky idea that this is going to fix it or everything's going to be great after we get married. And we don't realize you're typically marrying your opposite. And you have to learn how to walk through life with one another. There are these questions that people ask Jesus about divorce and people getting together and things like that. And so they come up and they test him, like, is it lawful to divorce one's wife for any reason? And, you know, Jesus is like, that's not right. You know, well, Moses gave us the ability to offer them a certificate of divorce. And Jesus is like, it wasn't that way from the beginning. When the Pharisees are questioning him about all of these things, I think it's because they want to get rid of Jesus. And John the Baptizer, you know, just probably a year or so before this, was beheaded because he talked about Herod marrying somebody else and getting a divorce. And John the Baptist is kind of beheaded for that. And so they think if we get Jesus to say the same thing, maybe we can get him in trouble too. And what is interesting is that Jesus' response is even more conservative than John the Baptist's response, because he said, whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another commits adultery. I think part of that is going back to the beginning, Jesus is defining the understanding of marriage as a covenant, not just a consumer relationship where if something doesn't meet my needs, I can get out of it. I mean, because that's what the Pharisees thought, that I can get rid of my wife for any reason. She burnt the food. She wasn't nice to me. I can just get rid of her. And that was a prerogative only of men. Women couldn't do that. You know, my husband's a mean ogre. I'm out. They have to stay. And so the men could divorce the women for any reason. And Jesus says, no, there's a covenant aspect in what a marriage is supposed to look like. And then the reason that you can actually get a divorce, he would say, then is adultery. Because why? Adultery kills the covenant. It destroys it. Just like if someone dies, the covenant then is also dead because that person died and then they're free to remarry. And the Apostle Paul comes into this and he says basically the same thing Jesus did. But then he says, if an unbeliever leaves, then you're also free. The word he uses is unbound. You're not bound anymore. And that is because the covenant has then been broken. It's been broken. But are there other things? And people ask that question. And I think that, yeah, I think in some places, some biblical scholars who I really appreciate believe that if there is abuse, illegal activity that doesn't stop, that puts your family in danger, that is also a killing of the covenant. You have to come back to understand how important this covenantal aspect is to what Jesus says, because it's not like they just got annoying, and it's not like you annoy them enough where they leave and say, oh, they killed the covenant. That is not what that's about. It's extreme. It's like an amputation, and it's supposed to feel that way. The people I know who have been divorced, it's been horrible and awful, and it is like you're losing a limb as you work through this. And so I'm going to kind of deal with a couple issues of how do I stay in a difficult marriage and how do I work through this and should I get remarried? But then I think the most important one is if I am divorced and remarried, how does God see me? Because there is grace and there is redemption and there is hope, and we don't have to hide our faces from God. We can step fully back into relationship. Why? Because of the cross. Right? Jesus bore our sins, and when we trust in him, our sins are transferred onto Jesus. The sin done to us and the sins that we've committed against others. The resurrection, God overturns death, brings us back to life again. And so maybe there are mistakes that have been made in a marriage. Maybe there are mistakes that other people have done towards you, and you can't go back and change the past, but we can trust Christ with our future. In the beginning of this, I'll talk about what divorce kind of did for me, because my mom was divorced twice, and it was devastating for me, because the one dad that I had, was my real dad that I felt like was my dad that actually liked me. So I felt this distance from who my dad was. And so I lived with my mom, and I remember in sixth grade through junior high, every day I'd come home from school, I rode my bike. So I'd come home from school, and the first thing that I do when I came home was I checked my mom's closet to make sure her clothes were still there, because I always thought she was going to leave me. And any time that she was out and she said, I'll be back at like 9 o'clock. And if it was 9 o'clock and I was home, not staying at a friend's house or something, I'd be like, I'd call, where are you? And this is a time without cell phones, right? So I had to call different places that she said she was going to be until I found her. And she was dating this guy at the time who didn't like it because I was so insecure and came home and threatened to beat me up. And like, how dare you throw me against the wall? Just, you know, but I'm just this kid, right? Who I don't understand the feelings of the aloneness that I have that divorce brought on me as a child. And this then leads into my marriage, where I'm married for, you know, a few years before I even today, I don't have a full handle on it, but until I got even a little bit of a handle on this thing of my wife's not going to leave me, you know, and I think it really does stem from these ideas of, if I annoy God, is God going to leave me? If I am this whiny brat kid, is God going to leave me? Because that's what happens in these divorce situations. So I think there's just a lot to it, and it's very difficult.
I feel so sad for little Aaron.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Well, little Aaron was also a pretty spazzy kid too. So, but I mean, it's still today. It leads into, you know, how I have to think through sometimes when certain things happen. I think, is this real, or is this me just perceiving it through this lens that I grew up with? You know, and I mean, you get to a certain age in your life, you think you go past these things, but you don't really. They're always there. And that's also why I asked Mike to come, because, you know, Mike's been through that difficult divorce in his life. And
yeah, the divorce was two very, very broken people that ended up in divorce, and with biblical reason for me to remarry, if you want to land on that square. Certainly there was a huge brokenness and dysfunction on both sides of the marital equation that, in remarrying, I think I gave Deb every opportunity for the first several years to abandon, to leave, to, you know, and so after a number of years, it's like, she's not going anywhere, you know, so there is that. Not that I was expecting or wanting, but it's just like, talk about giving somebody reasons to, you know, I was that guy. Mm-hmm. Whereas with Millie, my first wife, there was multiple affairs over almost 10 years, and so there, again, biblical grounds, but again, there was lots of reasons on both sides of that. Yeah, equal sign of marriage or that covenant relationship that were broken. But the worst of it is the kids, right? How it impacts and affects them. And, you know, and I was, you know, fortunate as a dad that I had full custody of my kids from the get-go. So that made it significantly better maybe for my kids, but also doesn't take away the heart.
I think a lot of parents probably end up in that spot where we don't want the kids to hurt, and yet They do.
Yeah.
And it's hard to even fathom what that hurt is doing or what it looks like. And then there's the issues of guilt, right, that go along with that. Mm-hmm. And this is, I think this is why it's so important for this to also take place in community when you walk through the healing portion of this and the other side of that, because we need one another to deal with those hard areas.
Yeah. Could I have made it work? Could I have taken Millie back? Could I, mm-hmm. you know, all those things. And you know, I was in community enough that I had some good friends that said, track record says, you can take her back, but it probably is not going to end any better, you know. It'll just be a couple of years down the road or less than.
So, Michelle, you tend to deal with a lot of people in different circumstances. I mean, what do you see in this as probably when people go through a divorce? What are some of their primary needs?
Oh, man, yeah. I've had a lot of experiences with this through therapy. A lot of different facets you can touch on. I mean, for one, definitely kids. I've worked with a lot of kids caught up in divorce or in the aftermath of it. And this is not to shame parents that their journey has led them through that for whatever reason, but it's a huge stressor. Like their entire household, their routine is turned upside down. There's a lot of attachment stuff that can come up in the midst of that. Even just the small, like granular things that we can overlook, like, you know, I left my stuff at my other parent's house this week and I forgot it and my homework's there, or this thing I really love, you know, just all of these little things that add up. It's heartbreaking, and it can really lead to a fundamental insecurity. And I think obviously we have opportunity to speak the gospel into that place, like this, the stability and security of who our God is, but it's an open wound. And you talk about like the amputation metaphor. It's like, I feel like that happens in the communal sphere also, right? Like you think about a wedding, and I remember you doing our wedding and you talked about the role of community. And so when there's a rupture in the marriage, like it doesn't just happen between or among the nuclear family, the whole community feels it. I have a client right now that's talking about she and her spouse have these friends that, you know, they've just always been best friends with them. And that family's going through a divorce. And they're like, how do I even show up as a good friend right now? How do I speak the truth? How do I not take sides in this? Like, so many complications and just layers of pain that come up in this. And then for the people going, you know, through the divorce, a lot of times just all of maybe these unexplored aspects of their identity and their values and their belief system come bubbling up because it's in the midst of this crisis, right? And this huge life transition. And I think there's a lot of good that can happen in that space amidst the pain and the chaos of that. But it really requires, I think, so much sensitivity and nurture. And I think oftentimes people's inclination is, oh, that's messy, I'm not going to touch that. And they mm-hmm. turn away, right? Mm-hmm. But it's like, that's the point where we need healthy community to lean into. Okay, these people are bleeding out, essentially. Like, how do we help them?
How do you encourage people to walk through this on kind of the, as it's happening, not necessarily just after?
You want to always promote saving the marriage if there's anything to save. Sometimes there's not, right? It's already too late, and it's just a matter of formalities. But I mean, if there's kids involved, it's like, it's worth all the effort and work you can do, you know. But also on the same hand, if there's safety issues, I'm not talking about physical safety, but other safety issues, you got to protect your kids too, mm-hmm. you know. And so at some point,
and yourself.
Whether it's divorce or not, it just may be we're out of here, we're going to go get our life sorted out and be on our own, you know. I don't even want to bring up the remarriage or re-relationship question. It's just, right. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate the message where you're like, yeah, maybe stay single. Well, like, yeah. You know, it doesn't necessarily need to be that. And,
mm-hmm. Well, especially when the kids are young, I think that's, I mean, nowadays, that's what I talk to somebody who's going through. I said, just stay single until your kids are grown. Mm-hmm. It just introduces a whole other mm-hmm. equation of difficulty. I don't know what the message gets into on remarriage at all, but you know, I mean, obviously, romance and all that being what it is, it's a strong pull. But boy, there's a lot to tackle with that too.
Yeah.
Starting it all over again. And
I take a whole paragraph, Mike.
And you know, and with Christianity, it's still at times a sore spot for me, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, the idea of never wanted to be divorced. You know, right. Which came from a divorced home. You know, and there are. To me, there's enough things in the scripture that, you know, warrant a very serious look at that.
Yeah. And,
yeah.
You mentioned Jeremiah 9.
Jeremiah 3.
Jeremiah 3.
Yeah. Where God refers to himself.
Where God refers to himself of divorce. I think some people are going to be a little shocked by that, hearing that.
What is the passage?
There's a thing where God references himself, like with Israel, as he's a divorced person.
Right. Yeah. They were unfaithful.
So what I'm going to say is, I asked everybody who's divorced in this room and God was here to stand up, God would stand up with you. And I think that's a way to be.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think it's a, I obviously I probably read it somewhere because I'm not that smart. But it's just something I think that would be helpful for people to hear and understand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very gracious.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Mm-hmm. And he had every right to divorce in the terms of the biblical sense. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And yet, what does he do? You know,
goes after.
He does.
Book of Hosea, right?
Yeah. Mm. Here you go.
Can I share a candid request as a therapist? Yes, marriage is intended for holiness and not happiness, but I think sometimes people skew that in a way where they overlook any problems. And I will tell you, like 90%+ of couples that come to therapy, they come way too late. So happiness is not the indicator of what makes a fruitful or healthy marriage necessarily, because there's brokenness, there's just the circumstances of the world and so many things we can't control. But if you are perpetually unhappy and you are slogging it out like day after day, like pay attention to that and get help, whether it's community or through therapy or other resources. Just that's my desperate plea for married couples out there.
Marriage should be fulfilling and happy.
Exactly.
I mean, it's meant for that.
Uh-huh. It's intended for flourishing.
It's a covenant that gets you through the difficulties, but it doesn't mean they shouldn't have, you know, fulfillment and satisfaction and joy and happiness in it. Yeah. Don't we give God every reason to divorce us, and yet he's faithful and comes for after us all the time. And that's such good news.
Well, next week we turn the corner a little bit, talk about the neighbor. So,
but it's still in regard to community too. It stays in the community aspect, but yeah. I figured that we could maybe have a little bit of fun with this. No, I'm kidding.
That's why I'm here.
Yeah.
Welcome back, Mike.
We got somebody to make fun of.